Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. When people think about the problem of global climate change and the kind of dependence we have on fossil fuels and the pollution that results, I'm sure the first thing that people think about is the automobile. But the fact of the matter is that the energy we use in our buildings and the resulting pollution is a much bigger and, in fact, the single most important contributor to the greenhouse problem and to the global warming problem. Now, the good news here is that we actually have some pretty good ideas about what we can do to make buildings more energy efficient, to then have some impact on this larger problem, and perhaps at the same time have our buildings be more comfortable. However, at the same time, those things do have problems that attach to them. And these are issues that we have talked about before here on the program in various ways. And we will do again here this morning with our guests, starting with Bill Rose. He's a research architect with the U of I Building Research Council, and he's been here before on the program many times. And we've talked about a number of different things. We've talked about how buildings get built, about the relationship between the people who design them and the people who build them, about why it is we like some buildings a lot and others we don't. All sorts of things about buildings and their relationship with the natural environment, historic preservation, and energy and comfort issues, all those things we've talked about. He also has brought along with him two guests who are here visiting the university to talk about one particular aspect of this. So here in the studio with us, Hartwig Kunzel. He is an engineer with the Fraunhofer Institute for Building Physics. It's in Holzkirchen in Germany. And also Achilles Karagiosis. He's a senior engineer at the Oak Ridge National Lab. And the two of them in their work really are focused on this particular issue. At Oak Ridge, they do things looking at energy efficiency and the design, construction, operation of buildings. And that's really the same sorts of things that they do at the Fraunhofer Institute, where they're interested in things like sound insulation and lighting and energy use and indoor climate and all of these sorts of things that also, again, have to do with buildings, how they're built, the energy that they use, how people feel in them, all of those sorts of things. And I do want to mention that Dr. Kunzel and Bill will be giving a talk, and that will be tonight, right, at 6 p.m. at the Plym Auditorium on the U of I campus, talking about a particular thing that they are interested in. And I know Bill and I have talked about this before, and that's moisture problems in buildings that can be certainly a problem, can shorten buildings' lives. You can get problems with mold, all kinds of problems. And it's one of the things that seems to go with sometimes if you make buildings tighter, which we do for energy efficiency, then here's a problem suddenly you end up with. You also may end up with moisture problems as a result of that. So we'll try to talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about all these things, and we're really pleased to have all of the guests here. Questions also are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
Sure. Good appreciate to be here.
And the thing, maybe the point, again, to start with is, Bill, and I think that people might be a little bit surprised that buildings actually, if you look at where the energy goes, how much energy is used, and then tie that to the problem of, you know, the pollution resulting from generating that energy, then in fact you have to say, yeah, that buildings are a bigger issue than our cars.
That's correct. We have there's a lot of room for improvement in how we use our buildings. We can save enormous amounts of energy. Oak Ridge, Tennessee, for example, is one of the centers in the United States, and Dr. Karagiosis, Achilles here, he's from Oak Ridge, Tennessee. They are sort of the people for the United States who are responsible for looking really closely at this issue, space conditioning costs in American buildings. And their programs touch on everything, include all the way to zero energy houses. We in Urbana, of course, are working on the same project. I think you've had guests here talking about this issue. But we can go a long, long way in saving energy. But I think the big issue is, can you go too far? Can Can houses be too tight? Can buildings be too tight? Isn't there an upper limit? And it's a tricky question. If you ask the question, can a building be if you ask the question, you know, are these two incompatible, dry, healthy buildings and energy conservation? The answer is a clear no. They're perfectly compatible. We can save energy and we can deliver dry, healthful buildings. And we're getting better and better at doing that all the time. Energy conservation is not the boogeyman in the moisture problem. We mm-hmm. can solve these mm-hmm. problems together. But it does require a fair amount of study. And that's what brings the guests here, is that study.
Well, since you point to the man from Oak Ridge here, I'll bring him into the conversation. And it does indeed seem that the first way that we approach this issue of wanting to make buildings more energy efficient is simply to say, well, let's just make them as tight as possible so that there's no leakage, so that, for example, in the wintertime, we keep the cold air out there and we keep the warm air on the inside. The problem seems, though, that we get to is, at least one of the problems, is that you need to have air exchange with the outside or else you're going to have problems. Is that the big problem with making buildings too tight, or are there others as well?
Well, by providing a level of airtightness in our existing building stock, we have the ability now to have some control over how this airflow is coming to the inside. So if you can control it, and then you provide supplement the air so that you have some dilution of the pollutants that might be happening on the inside, now you have a win-win situation. And that's particularly an issue that we are currently planning to work closely with Bill Rose here from this university, and with about 95% of all the manufacturer of these air tightening technologies, like the Air Barrier Association of America. And our intention is to work together and develop a very definitive study on how much savings one can get actually with having air tightness on a whole building. And we believe that you can achieve major savings, savings of the order of 30 to maybe even 40%. And absolutely, and we want to do also understand the having a positive impact. So you provide this air tightness, increase the air tightness, but at the same time provide a higher indoor air quality for the inhabitants to enjoy both the energy savings as well as a better interior environment.
Yeah. Well, I'll bring our third guest here, Hartwig Kunzel, into the conversation. I know that in Germany, I think really Germany has been a leader in this area of trying to design and construct buildings that are very energy efficient, passive solar design. I think that there's been a lot of interest and a lot of work in Germany and done with that. How overall do you think that Germany is doing a pretty good job, particularly as compared to other countries?
Well, I think we do a pretty good job when it comes to new buildings. But every new building is adding to the energy bill. So for us, it's more important to do something about the building stock. That means we have to insulate the old buildings, because old buildings, on a total, use more than 90% of the total energy that we use for buildings. And therefore, insulating old buildings is one of the major subjects that we have in Europe.
I guess they would be, well, I don't know, is the building stock in Europe, are there more older buildings than there are newer buildings? Is that more of an issue in retrofitting? Is that more of an issue in Europe? Yeah.
Well, we have more older buildings than you have. Some are 100 years old and older. Most buildings are masonry buildings, so they're very durable, but pretty poorly insulated. So we have to insulate them, especially at the outside. And we have to insulate them before we make them airtight. If you put in new windows that are airtight and you don't insulate, then you're bound to get more problems.
Is this something that and actually it was just recently on the program I talked with a fellow who was a journalist who has written a lot about renewables in Germany and talked about the fact that in various countries in Europe, the government has actually made a very deliberate effort to move in the direction of more renewables. So in terms of sources of energy that don't come with the same problems with fossil fuels. If you look at energy efficiency in buildings, is this something that the government has particularly said, this is really important and we're going to go in that direction. We're going to even try to build some incentives in for people to make the investment in doing that retrofitting in the buildings.
Yes. First of all, we have energy regulations for new buildings, so they have to be almost passive houses. But also when you want to retrofit an old house, if you want to change the stucco, for instance, you have to insulate. So you cannot just change the stucco and do nothing else. You have to do something about the energy efficiency of the old buildings. And these are the energy regulations that we have.
Mm-hmm. Is that, Bill, this is, it's something that seems to be here in the United States. We haven't quite we haven't quite gone there. Either we, you know, it's hard to get government to make a to actually take that stand and said, this is really important and we're going to do that. And not only just encourage people to do it because it's nice, but to actually to try to give some incentives for people to do that, because you are, after all, if particularly if you're looking at an existing building, it's going to mean an investment of money to do that. Eventually, you know, maybe there's going to be a payoff, but initially that there's going to be a big – could be a big upfront investment.
Yes. The United States invests – the United States has developed standards and codes for energy conservation. The codes are written in the United States as model codes. That is, they're just books with no legal authority until they get adopted by states or municipalities. So we have no national building code in the United States. We have a national model code, and it's just published by a publishing company. And if they want to sell books, then they'll sell them to the cities and to the states that adopt these codes. 5 or 10 years ago, there were several model codes in the United States, and they've moved in the direction of having a single model code for the United States that, curiously enough, is called the International Code. It's broken up into several different code documents, and one of them is the International Energy Conservation Code. It's a complicated document, and I think it has to be because how to solve energy problems in individual houses or individual buildings with individual designs doesn't lend itself to an easy fix. So it's a little daunting to look at, and I think that has scared some people off. I'm sorry to say, but I think the state of Illinois has now adopted an energy conservation code, but I can't say that for sure because I haven't kept up to date on it. But statewide codes for Illinois are very rare. But city codes can be common and effective. Chicago, of course, has an energy conservation code. But even if you have a code, especially if it's from a complicated document, the interpretation of it can be varied from place to place. We really look for ways that we can go into a building, make quick, effective decisions that are verifiable, and call that a day. But the energy picture is often more complex than that. It often takes a lot of study.
Yeah.
But we're doing the first steps.
Let me introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580, Bill Rose. He's a research architect with the U of I Building Research Council, which is housed within the Department of Architecture. He's been here before many times to talk about buildings. And we have two special guests here in the studio. Hartwig Kunzel, he's an engineer with the Fraunhofer Institute for Building Physics in Holzkirchen, Germany. And Achilles Karagiozis, he's a senior engineer at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And we're talking about energy efficiency in construction of buildings. Sometimes we're talking about retrofitting existing buildings, and questions are welcome. My engineer tells me, with you guys, Achilles and Hartwig, if you could scoot up to the table a little bit, we need to get you guys closer to the microphones. There you go. Very good. Again, maybe I'll ask Achilles Karagiozis, because you're at Oak Ridge and the business that you're in is doing research. I'm sure that there are probably people who maybe are involved in building buildings who, you know, like the idea of energy efficiency. I think they'd say, well, that's a fine idea, but I'm not really sure how exactly to do it. I mean, how good are we at getting the results of the kind of research that you might do or that any of these guys might do, actually into the hands of the people who can then apply it?
Well, David, what we have done at Oak Ridge is through our the efforts from the Department of Energy, because we are a Department of Energy laboratory, what we have been doing is we've been working closely with the builders, many builders of various sizes. And we've done work through the Building Technology Group at the Department of Energy, working on a program which we called Building America. In that program, we have worked very closely, bringing new technologies to the major builders in the U.S. By doing that, what we've done is we have produced a fairly large stock of energy-efficient buildings. However, we're using existing technologies. And for us to really go ahead, what we want to do is integrate and develop the latest technologies in an affordable fashion. And for example, one of the things that we do is we actually, once we develop the research content, develop a new insulation procedure or method or material itself, what we do is we go and we demonstrate in the lab, and then we have some test houses that we demonstrate in the field. But that's not good enough. I mean, the final test is having the inhabitant live in a building made out of that particular highly energy efficient product. And what we do is we build these homes, work with a builder, local builders all around the country, and introduce this new technology. For example, it would be maybe a phase change encapsulated type of technologies in fibrous insulations, such as cellulose insulation. So now what you do is you have these very fine particles where they encapsulate phase change materials that allow you now to not have the instantaneous load that you would require, because now you have some capacitance in your insulation. Your insulation now isn't just a flow through of heat flow instantaneously through a lightweight construction, our technologies that we use in the U.S., but now it has the way of storing some of that energy and releasing later on during the night. Mm. So now you have a way of handling these big loads, and that's really good for our producers of electricity, and it really allows us to reduce our energy consumption that way. But in order for us to actually demonstrate that technology, we have to work with a builder, bringing that technology to the owner of that building, and getting his feedback at the long end of the road, this tedious road.
Yeah, let me ask Hartwig Kunze the same sort of question. How do you feel that you're doing in Germany in terms of getting the results of research into the hands of then the people who actually use either those materials or those techniques, either to build a new building or to retrofit an existing building?
I think that's the biggest problem that we face. We know a lot in the research community, but to bring it to the people, to the tradespersons, that's quite a challenge. Mm-hmm. What we do, we give talks, we do courses, we educate people, but we reach only a small percentage of all the tradespeople that we have in Germany. So this is something we have to work on still.
Mm. I suppose another issue that you have to talk about, another way of approaching this is on the demand side, and that meaning that, you know, you can educate architects and designers and builders, but if you don't have consumers who say, I want this, either I want it in my new building, or I think it's really important and I'm going to go back and retrofit my other building. If that demand isn't there on that side, it's not going to take off as nearly as fast as if you're simply working from the contractor, architect, or designer side. Is this something that you think people are really more and more saying, yes, I think this is important, and if I'm going to build a new building, I want it to be a green building. If I have a building now, I'm going to want to make it energy efficient.
I think any time you introduce a new technology, a new way of thinking, the consumers might want to be skeptical at first. Do these guys really know what they're doing? If they've been doing it one way and we're asking them to change and do it a different way, am I setting myself up for a little disappointment? I think we're over that. I think that any any person who wants an energy efficient, durable, and healthful building can put their foot down and demand it, and ask the builder, what kind of premium would I be expected to pay over your baseline building? I do think it takes shopping. I was at the home show, and I was frankly pretty disappointed by what was actually being offered by the builders there in terms of what I was hoping for energy performance. Maybe that's what it's going to take in order to make it happen, is to educate the consumer, because the builders do seem to be very strongly cost and code driven. We have to improve. So if we improve the codes on the regulatory end, and we're able to promise benefits from energy conservation, that is to say, not only are you going to save energy, but you're going to feel better in your home when you do, and it's going to last longer. If we can make those kinds of promises, then we got the builders in a real squeeze lock. If they're hearing it from both sides, they will have to move. There are good buildings in town. There are some outstanding technologies that have been used and very good builders. But you have to hear the stories from the people who live in those houses.
Mm. Well, that's, I guess, a bottom line. Cost is always going to be a bottom line issue. And if you say to people, all right, I'm not sure what nowadays the average cost per square foot to build a new house is. But, you know, if it's X amount of dollars for doing it the way we've always done it, and then you say to them, now, we could make this a really great building, could be very green in construction and operation. It'll be energy efficient. Down the road, you'll see benefits, but it's going to cost X plus per square foot, and it's going to cost you more to build the building. And a lot of people, if you say, okay, there you go, you can choose, you can have this building, you can have that building, this one costs this much, this one costs that plus more, I'm sure a lot of people would say, I'd like to have this other one, but I just can't do that.
I'll know that the consumers are serious about this when they take the square foot cost. When they look at their budget, they understand that a very high-quality, energy-efficient building is going to cost more per square foot than the other one, and to say, I want the quality rather than the square footage. When they're willing to say...
Oh, you mean make the building smaller?
Make the building smaller.
What a revolutionary idea.
Of course, I'm biased. Our organization originally was the Small Homes Council. But... When Americans or Canadians go to international conferences and demonstrate the wonderful energy-conserving technologies that are put in place in the marketplace buildings of the United States, and those buildings have two and three times the square footage of a European building, we get laughed off the stage. They say, you're not serious about energy conservation. When we see houses moving toward reasonable sizes, I'll go ahead and put a value term on it. Then I'll think that the consumers are a force to be reckoned with here.
Yeah, Kelly, do you want to weigh in on this?
I'd like to give a little bit different perspective of what happened in Canada. I lived in Canada for many, many years, and while I was growing up in the early '80s. There were an enormous amount of information on the radio, on the TV, providing advertisement on the energy efficiency of the R2000 homes that they were developing at that time. And they also were able, with a lot of effort from the federal government, to get in the Home Builders Association, to get the buy-in from those folks. And believe it or not, at every mall that I used to visit during my weekends, there was a booth that was talking about the benefits of energy efficiency, how great it is, and how the long-term and short-term benefits of having an energy-efficient home. So, and also the educational programs that were offered free to all the builders to be able to get the builders to understand the technology, because a builder will not incorporate a new technology, even if it costs is not going to cost a major incremental cost in their budget for the home. They're not going to do that unless they understand it. And I think that's where probably there's a missing link. You develop the technology is ready to be adopted, but you need to train the builders on how to implement that technology correctly. And because we have had these major problems like North Carolina, 3,200 executive homes in the Hanover County in North Carolina all failed within 6 months with adopting an energy-efficient technology at that time in the early 1996, 1995, 1996, 1997 period there. And that discouraged a lot of builders in that area, and they still, even today, are discouraged at using some of the more energy-efficient wall systems they were employing in those constructions. So it has to do with the combination of having education available. If you educate the public, then I think the public could do the right choice. I think they have.
You want to talk about this in Germany?
Well, I think it all comes down to money. And since in Europe energy prices are much higher than here in the U.S., people are more interested in saving energy. The question is, how do you know how much energy your house will consume? And therefore, we will get next year an energy code in Germany that requires you to give a certificate to somebody who sells a home. So if you are selling your home, your house, you have to supply a certificate that says how much energy it consumes under normal conditions. And the same is true for landlords. If you're a landlord and you want to let an apartment, then you have to provide a certificate. And I think that's very interesting, because then people can judge how much do you pay for the rent and how much or how high will be my energy bill. Mm. And that's a big incentive to do something about energy savings.
Mm. Is all this, in a sense, is taking a step back? Well, when you talk about making buildings energy efficient, does this really depend on developing new materials, essentially new building materials? It's we can't do it by essentially just novel uses of what we've got already. That it's got to be something, for example, like the kind of insulation that you talked about, that not only is an air barrier to the cold air, but actually does something. It stores some heat and then releases it later. Is the key to continued success along this line, is it going to have to be in developing new materials, things like that?
Well, we believe that it's a little bit of both. I mean, there are existing materials that you can use effectively today to produce a home that will be very energy efficient with a not that great of an incremental cost. We're talking about costs for a 2,500 square foot home, something of the order of $500 to $1,000. That's the total cost that we're talking about.
That's only adding $500 to $1,000 on top of the cost of the whole cost. Project.
Yes. Okay. But you need to make some choices, okay? So you need to make some smart choices in the equipment that you use, in the level of insulations, in the configuration of the whole building, the use of passive solar. If you have to make some decisions up front. That is the incremental cost. You don't need these super duper energy efficient new material products that we're developing at the present time. But why we're developing it? Because we believe that in 2020 we want to come to a point where the building now produces energy for the grid rather than consumes energy. So that's the reason why we've been working and developing this research. So we go along go further beyond what we have today, and.
I'm curious, just going back to what Bill was talking about, we were joking about the size issue. And I'm just curious, Dr. Kunze, in Germany, what for a single family home, what the average square foot is?
That would be about, I think, 1,500.
Mm-hmm. But no, only about 1,500 square feet.
Yeah, 150 square meters, that's about 1,500 square feet.
That's pretty small. But what is it in the United States, Bill? Do you know?
I don't know, but it's well over 2,000, I think, at this point, and they've been growing. They've been burgeoning in, yeah. in size over the last few years. But a 1,500 square foot home in the U.S. is very small.
It'd be considered to be quite small. Do you think that that's something that's like here in the United States is likely to change? There are good reasons why it would and it should. Whether it will, maybe that's another question.
Well, one of the factors that led to the great expansion in home ownership. I mean, we've been building homes like crazy. Anyone who used to own farmland knows this, that that we're building homes like crazy. It hasn't been because of an increase in population or immigration. It's been because families have been sort of breaking up, and individuals that used to live together for a longer period of time are now moving out and affording their own homes. If push comes to shove, home construction goes down, I suspect there might have to be a sort of a change in the other direction. If people can't afford homes, or there aren't that many homes out there, or there are restrictions on where homes can be built, or if they're just located way too far out, then the family life might be the thing we look at. In other words, the families that got broken up in the last 10 years of home ownership might start asking questions. Well, do you think I can put up with my brother-in-law for the time being? So I don't know. When I look at what these executive homes, these 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 square foot homes, what life is going to be like in them at a time of, we know that we're headed toward energy crunch time, and we have to live with what we have, and if what we have are McMansions, then there might be mother-in-laws and brother-in-laws and, you know, three generations living in these homes. And if we could do anything, I'd like to imagine how these homes could be redesigned inside for greater privacy, or for consolidating one group with another. We work a lot on Native American reservations, and there's a severe housing crunch in Native American lands, and we run into many homes where families and many families all live together, and live together, it appears, quite well, at least during our visits. I'm just interested in how people are going to be living in homes. Sure, we could make smaller homes, but the housing stock that we have from the last 10 or 20 years is a big, fat housing stock.
Yeah. We have three guests here in the studio with us, and I'm a bit past here the midpoint, so I'd like to introduce again everybody if you have just tuned in. Bill Rose, last fellow you heard speak, he's a research architect with the U of I Building Research Council and has been here on the program many times before to talk about design and construction of buildings. Hartwig Kunzel is an engineer with the Fraunhofer Institute for Building Physics in Holzkirchen in Germany, and Achilles Kirigiosis is senior engineer at the Oak Ridge National Lab in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. He's Canadian. And he's there all year to be talking with us on this, and also that Bill, I know Bill and Dr. Kunzel are going to give a talk tonight on one particular aspect, something that's related to this business of making buildings tighter, and that is the moisture problem. Maybe we talk a little bit about that, if we can do it without getting too technical. But before we do that, we have a caller, so let's bring them into the conversation. I also want to make sure people listening know that if you have questions, comments, you can call in 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The caller here is in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Previously, there was some discussion about retrofitting older buildings, and I just was wondering if I could get some information on your guess what could be done with, you know, the typical house that you'd find in Urbana, like mine, and it's, you know, wood frame house. There may be 4 inches between, you know, in the walls, and there may be insulation or maybe not, and, you know, some drafty windows. I mean, are there ways to really make a difference in a home like that, other than sort of the obvious things of just, you know, caulking here and there? I mean, are there ways of bringing these up to to the, you know, new standards like close to passive house and this type of thing?
Well, this is Bill Rose, an owner of a frame house in Urbana. Yes, I think there's quite a bit that can be done. One of the first things I'd do would be to do infrared thermograph. That is, look for where you have good insulation and air tightness. We're going to be moving into a cold period, and so you could contact the utility company just for some resources on where to go to find infrared thermograph equipment. But find the cold spots and then look at those cold spots and see if they are related to airflow through the building. I know my house sure had it. Share probably still does, and insulation holidays. You can find exactly where insulation is, where it's not. The other thing you can do is if your home is anything like mine, there's a lot of room for tightening it up, and I think the best place to work on tightening it up is, for starters at least, is weather stripping the windows. I'm a big fan of retaining the windows that you have and making them work much better. I wouldn't go put in new windows. It's hard to find good data on this, but everybody who has data sort of has one reason or another for not putting it out there. But everything I hear sort of in the underground scuttlebutt is we're not saving energy when we change out old windows for new windows. So I'm not sure I would go there. Attic insulation, you can never if you have a foot or 2 feet of insulation in the attic, great. But I think by finding out where the cold spots are, you can, for one thing, save energy. For another, make things more comfortable by making them more uniform.
And then if you do see that there are cold spots, let's say due to insulation problems, I've been reading some things about aircrete, cementitious concrete, and stuff like that that you could put in. I mean, is there something new there? I mean, what would you do for the insulation? I mean, there's sort of two ways of going. One is getting more things inside the house, and then I guess you could start putting things outside the house in terms of, urethane pads or whatever, something like that. I mean,
You nailed that. You got that right, I think. First, you would look at what you can do inside the house. I happen to be a big fan of foam. There's hardly a moisture problem or an energy problem that I can't foam away. Of course, foam has to be protected in case of fire.
Right. There's also some health issues about what the foam gives off, too.
Perhaps, but I would dismiss those. There's the blowing agents. The problem with the blowing agents in many of the urethane foams is not so much its impact on human health, but that they can be greenhouse gas. They can hurt the ozone layer in great quantities. They're working hard on blowing agents that do this less. But I wouldn't be too concerned about health issues related to the blowing agents with urethane foams.
Uh-huh.
But then
you're
exactly right that by moving to the outside of the building and going from the normal 1x6 tongue and groove sheathing that we have in Urbana homes to an insulated sheathing, it can have great benefit come from that.
Yeah, but that's a major expense.
And it's a major expense. That's right.
And if one's energy plant, the furnace, air conditioner, is older than 15, 20 years old or so, I guess that would be a major thing to change too, just right off the bat.
Yeah, you should be sitting here. It sounds like you've thought through issues with about the right ranking, I think.
Is there anything else that the other guests might add to? I mean, maybe what's happening in Canada or Europe that I might know about? Share with us.
I believe the one of the most important. If you have a 15-year-old equipment that provides you your heating, the energy efficiency of that appliance is probably not to par with what you can find today, and that would be the number one item to look at. The second item would be the tightening of the envelope and the retrofit of the existing envelope. But again, there you would have to be a little bit careful on the levels of insulation that you would want to provide if you insulate on the outside, having in mind what you have today inside your structure. You don't want to have a potential for some moisture problems there, but there are rules, guidelines that you could use for that. The third would be the change of windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well. Thank you very much. And if anybody else comes up with other ideas during the rest of the program, I'd like to hear those.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. Let's go on. We'll talk with somebody else here, also in Urbana. This is line two. Hello.
Good morning, all.
Hi.
The three guests ever taken their message, which I totally agree with, to the mortgage bankers? I have heard that there is a record number of mortgage foreclosures in the United States the past few years. And, of course, the mortgage bankers grant mortgages to the home buyers buying these excessively large homes. Have you ever brought your message to them? And I'll hang up and listen.
No, I haven't. I'm sure others have. But one way to get to the heart of a mortgage banker is to get to the heart of the name escapes me of the profession of people who estimate the value of a house.
Appraisers.
There's been an effort for about 20 years to try to allow the energy quality of the home to be considered in the appraisal. And I know that the industry has been looking at doing this, but they are sort of bottom line in terms of comparables and locations that it seems to be rather difficult. If we could get to the appraisers, then I think we could move on to the mortgage bankers.
Okay. We're down to the point here where you have maybe about 7-8 minutes left. One thing that I am really interested in having you talk at least a little bit about, and if people then are really interested, they're motivated, they can come to the talk that Bill and Hartwig are going to do, about this moisture issue. Now, I think that maybe people are used to the idea that one of the problems that we've seen as buildings have gotten tighter is problems with indoor air quality. Because if you don't get exchange with air from the outside, you have the possibility of indoor air pollutants building up from natural living activities. And there's also the possibility that the building materials off gas and, you know, there may be some number of problems connected with that, which you can actually, though, deal with if you have the appropriate air exchange with the outside. What's the relationship here now between trying to tighten a building and having moisture problems?
A lot of people say, watch out, you're going to trap moisture in the building. Mm-hmm. And it's an expression that's a little troubling in one way, but it captures something. We do have to watch out if you get water, like rainwater coming in, liquid water that gets in the that's allowed to come in but has trouble getting out, because the only way it can get out is by evaporation and then air exchange. Well, you're getting air coming in really easy but having a hard time getting out. And I think that's what a lot of people imagine when they say trapping water in the building. Well, the answer is pretty easy. Keep the rainwater out of the building and keep it out of the foundation. In other words, if we had only the water loads from respiration, hygiene, cleaning the building, we could get by with a low amount of dilution. And generally, if the building smells stale, then you don't have enough air exchange. Make sure you have enough air exchange so that it smells fresh. And typically that would be enough to take care of all the moisture issues. Problem is that we're trying to use air exchange to deal with stupid moisture problems that we have in the building that we shouldn't try to solve by big old fans and big old holes, but they have to be solved by using our heads about the water coming in and keeping it from coming in.
So then we're going back to the really the old-fashioned stuff about how you have to have good gutters and you have to have appropriate grade around the house. And the water that comes off the roof, you got to make sure it gets away from the house. And that's me and Hank Spies have been talking about that for the last 25 years. And that hasn't changed. That hasn't changed at all. It's just that really basic, mechanical, old-fashioned stuff there, right?
That's right.
And you don't need any revolutionary building material to deal with that.
We work on computers in buildings, but unfortunately the computer can't get out there and clean the gutters for you in November. And speaking of which, I hope everyone, now that the leaves have come down, have cleaned their gutters.
Yeah. Anything that you guys would want to add to that?
Well, you need moisture control. I mean, you have to be careful not to have too high humidity in your house, and ventilation is the key to that, or even dehumidification if you want. And if you still want to save energy, then install a mechanical ventilation system with heat recovery. Hmm.
So that when we're talking about getting buildings as tight as we're talking about, do you really is the way that you get the adequate air exchange, are you going to have some mechanical ventilation system? Because you can't rely on the building passively breathing the way that it used to?
Yes. Either you need a mechanical ventilation system or you need operable windows, and you have to open the windows in order to get enough ventilation.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with both Bill and Hartwig. However, we have climatic locations in the U.S. You see, the U.S. is an amazing country because we have tropical conditions, we have very hot and humid conditions, and we have extreme cold conditions. We have mixed conditions, and we have other conditions that are very specific to coastal regions. And you can't, unfortunately, make one design guideline that fits all. Mm-hmm. However, though, as Bill mentioned, with our abilities, with these software tools that we've been developing, now we have a way of understanding what are the ideal interior conditions. And, for example, I'll give you an example for Seattle. Well, Seattle needs a lot of dilution. Seattle, you can't use a little bit of dilution because it has already a very high relative humidity on the outside. Mm. So you need to probably condition somehow the air when you bring it in if you want to have optimal condition. So not only do you have to have a mechanical system bringing in fresh air, but you have to possibly even have to condition it depending on the conditions that you have. But that's what the model could tell you. I mean, it's...
Okay. Well, let's try and talk with a couple of more people here. Urbana's next, line one. Hello.
Hello. I am tuning in late, so you may have talked about this. There was a caller who talked about banks having an interest in improvements. But I also wonder about loan programs sponsored by cities. Are there programs where you could borrow money through like a city program? Let's say your power bill is $150 a month, and you can cut that in half, so the person borrowing the money would then pay like a loan of that size, so that really the person who was taking the money out wouldn't really be losing anything, and there would be like some interest or whatever. Do you know of any programs like this? Is it just not practical, or the savings not big enough that you just can't do it? I'm just curious about that.
I don't know the answer to that question. It's a very good question. I invite you to call the Building Research Council to get an answer to it. What we do have in Illinois is a home energy rating system but it's not a loan for upgrade. It is instead a possibility of a premium discount on a mortgage according to the rating system, it can be shown to meet their standards.
I see. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go on here. Let's go next to Chicago, line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I think you guys are beating a dead horse. I live in a high-rise, 200 apartments, nice heat, nice windows, everything. As soon as it gets comfortable, they open their windows.
Right.
Why? They all say they have to have air. We got a good ventilating system, but they still insist they have to have air. How do you deal with people like that?
I think you have if the high rise is designed and built well at the outset, then users can find comfort without opening the windows. We all have experienced not too long ago a high-rise in Chicago,
yes,
just before the Energy Conservation Code came in, that was the pits. We really need good design of high rises. But I think you're right to note the importance of that in our housing stock.
No matter what you do, talk to them, they still open the windows. They insist they have to have air. And the air, technically, they say, is cleaner inside than they bring in from the outside. So you don't get anywhere with these people.
Some buildings lend themselves to having the windows operable. Some do not. I think a really good design would allow would have units isolated from one another, such that if you open the windows, you're not penalizing your neighbors. But I don't think we're there yet.
I think we're going to have to stop. My apologies. We have a couple of people we can't take. I'm sure, though, in future, in other days, other guests, we'll keep getting back to some of these same subjects. They're not going to go away. But for the moment, we have to finish up. Let me thank our guests, Bill Rose. He's a research architect at the U of I Building Research Council. Hartwig Kunzel, he's an engineer with Fraunhofer Institute for Building Physics in Holzkirchen in Germany. And Achilles Karagiozis, he's a senior engineer at the Oak Ridge National Lab in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And, by the way, Dr. Kunzel and Bill Rose will be giving a talk talking about this issue of dealing with the moisture in buildings, moisture and energy efficiency, and how those two things are related. They'll be giving a talk tonight at 6 at the Plym Auditorium on the U of I campus. And I assume anybody who is interested in stopping by should feel welcome. All right, good. Well, thank you both, all three, very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.